Welcome to Sound Practice, the business podcast for physicians and healthcare leaders, hosted by Mike Tsakopoulos and produced by the American Association for Physician Leadership.
We've all heard the biblical proverb, "Physician, heal thyself." Of course, the moral of this proverb is physicians should care for themselves so they can better care for others. Unfortunately, the medical community continues to suffer from stress and burnout at alarmingly high numbers. My guest today is an expert in coaching high-performance individuals to achieve not only results, but also well-being. Next on Sound Practice. My guest today is Dr. Nikesh Dhawan. Dr. Dhawan is Vice President, Behavioral Health at GuideWell in Florida Blue. He is a certified physician executive and is board certified in psychiatry, sports psychiatry, and addiction medicine. Dr. Dhawan is internationally recognized author and expert in the fields of healthcare quality, reimbursement models, and digital innovations. Nikesh Dhawan, welcome to Sound Practice.
Thank you for having me, Michael. It's great to be with you.
It's my absolute pleasure. You've got such an interesting background. Let's talk a little bit about that. Dr. Dhawan, you're a former athlete, sports psychiatrist, and physician executive. Can you share your personal journey and how your experiences have shaped your perspective on high performance and well-being?
Absolutely. Well, let's start with this. I'm a former high-performing athlete. Okay, no longer a high-performing athlete. But let me tell you about the athletic side first. So I was a former collegiate coach. And the mindset of an athlete is one, and even when you're younger, it's this sense of drive to excel, a drive to succeed. I remember reading Alan Abrahamson's book on Michael Phelps, The Will to Win. You know, it's something that just is a continuous passion to do your best. And I think physicians are like that. I think the 1 million physicians in the United States, I consider them world-class cognitive or mind athletes. And so I think in the being an athlete, though, you learn that sometimes you have to push yourself beyond what you really think it's possible. I think physicians are like that. But you have to do it both. You know, let's face it, when you're an athlete and trying to be a scholar at the same time, time management is critical. Being able to know what you focus on, what you don't focus on is critical. And you learn to work with people. You learn to work with your teammates. You learn leadership. And then when you become a coach, you no longer think about yourself. You think about how can I help this person achieve their dreams and ambitions. And so I think having that sort of background, it has done good things for me in the what I would call organization executive world. And being a sports psychiatrist, you know, working with some of the world's greatest athletes and understanding how they approach their sport, how they approach their what I would call level of interest, helping them balance life and work. And, you know, we've got that same issue in medicine. How do you maintain your identity as a person and still fulfill your passion as what you think is your calling as a physician? So, yeah, it's so many parallels, Michael, so many parallels.
All right. You've got me curious now. What was your sport or sports?
No, so I was a collegiate tennis player. We were top ranked in the country. Then I coached at both women's and men's tennis, and we were nationally ranked. And I had some athletes that were on the pro circuit, and it was just a joy. But as a sports psychiatrist, I worked with every sport you can imagine: tennis, golf, basketball, football, baseball, soccer, track, you name it. I was working with people that had a passion in those sports at all levels, amateur, high school, college, professional. So that's my background.
Fascinating. I had a close friend in professional school that had been on the tennis circuit, and his position was that there was not a lot of difference in ability between number 300 in the world and maybe number 50th in the world, in that it was all mental focus. It may be different in the top few people in the world. There may be some physical ability there. Do you believe that?
Having worked with somebody that went from 300 to 100 and somebody that worked from 100 to, say, you know, much higher, it's really both. When I've worked with coaches who, let's say, have been with somebody that's an All-American at the NCAA, and this can be whether you're football, baseball, golf, tennis, it doesn't matter. The coach helps you change the technique. The physical therapist and or trainer helps your muscles and tendons get a little better. And then the sports psychologist or the psychiatrist enhances your mind. So I really do think even at that level, I'll give you a great story. I remember when I was coaching against we were playing against the number one team in the country. And I was assistant coach, but both the head coach and I saw the opponent. And we just told our doubles team, you know, the backhand volley at mid-range is the weakness of this other team. Anytime you're at the net, go after that. And they beat the number one team in the country just because that little technical thing. And now those guys went on to play Wimbledon, whereas the other ones that were number one in the country in college never made it on the pro circuit. And so technique does matter. But if you don't add technique and physicality and mental, you cannot get from 300 to top 20. You cannot. So
let's get into how your athletic background influenced your approach to medicine and leadership. Maybe talk about some of the skills you developed and how it influenced your practice.
Absolutely. So when I think of, and you know, Apple's what I would call leadership competencies, you know, when you divide it into what's called general leadership competencies and then technical, okay, those two things. So when I think of general leadership, you know, the self-management part, the self-awareness, self-control, resilience, humility, that is so critical to understand oneself, understand who you are, what you're good at, what you're not good at, and to be humble about it, and to be able to modulate both your thinking and your emotions. I think that is a fundamental sort of leadership, a foundational leadership skill set. And on the technical side, as a physician leader, you have to understand strategy. You have to understand how do you understand the environment, what's going on, what are the tactics can be used, how do you resolve problems that you're looking at. And so a combination of general leadership skill set, especially knowing yourself, knowing others, being able, as a coach, you have to understand who you're working with. You have to really, what I would call, you can't instill or insert your life experience into somebody else's life experience and say, hey, why don't you do that? You have to really understand their perspective. So I think that helps as both a player and a coach. And the technical side, like in football, you can be the nicest, best human being and people can love you. But if in football, if you don't know X's and O's and you don't understand which way the wind is going and where the ball needs to be kicked, I'm sorry, you're going to lose the game. So you have to know both sides of the coin. And I think that's what I brought into my sort of a journey as an executive. You know everything about quality, know everything about risk, know everything about healthcare reimbursement, know everything you can about operations and finance and strategic thinking and community relations, as well as pay attention to others and listen to yourself. So I think it really has helped me throughout my career.
Let's drill down a little bit more. What do you believe are the key factors that contribute to high performance, not only in athletes, but also in physicians and executives? And how do those factors intersect with well-being?
All right. So let me share with you how we define well-being, how I've defined it, and then I'll sort of dissect that. Okay. So well-being is an overall positive and hopeful mental state, fueled by a sense of purpose, satisfaction with life, work, relationships, your own physical health and functioning, capacity to adapt to stressors, and a feeling of control over one's future. Now, that's a long sentence, but you will not find a sentence anywhere in any book similar to that. You will find books written that combine all those, okay? So that's well-being. Now, inside that is, if there's not a goal, and whether you're a physician, executive, or an athlete, one must have goals. One must know what you need to do to get there. One must pay attention to it and always look at what can I do better. And so, and if it's, and that's about having control over your future. Because if you don't have sense of control of your future, feeling control, life can feel chaotic. Okay. So that's critical. I think a sense of purpose. I think people that go into, whether it's being a clinical practice or in a leadership role, one must have what I would call not only in the gut, but in the heart. Why are you doing this? What allows you to have this sort of passion, the fire in your belly, and make sure that you understand the fire in your belly about it. And then your ability to get along with others is so critical. And that's where empathy comes in. That's where understanding other people comes in. That's where building trust with others comes in. Because, you know, whether you're in sports or as an executive, relationships matter. Trusting other people's matter. Them trusting you matters. And so if you're able to do that, and the thing about adapting to stressors, if you as an athlete, and I think physicians are not as good as athletes these days at this. And let me tell you what I think that is. Athletes have learned that rest and recovery are critical. Okay, rest and recovery is fundamental. We, as a practicing physician, as a physician executive, I have to remind myself, rest and recovery is important. Because for an athlete, if you're in football, baseball, basketball, you know, game day is only 2 hours. It may be a week away, maybe 2 weeks, maybe 2 months away. But for an executive and a clinician, game day is every hour. And so you really have to pay attention to what I would call that rest and recovery and sort of the self-learning. Because in sports, you are always practicing and learning 90% of the time, and you're executing 10% of the time. Whereas as a physician or executive, you're executing 90% of the time and learning and figuring stuff out probably 10% of the time. It's a very different world, and that's why you got to rest and recover. You have to.
You mentioned trust.
Yes.
And it seems to me that we may be living in times of some distrust of the medical community by the general public, and that could be discouraging and may be for many physicians. Any thoughts on how to practice medicine in a distrustful world?
I am sure 1,000 years ago, somebody walked into their doctor's office and said, hey, my uncle said this, and I really believe my uncle. Okay, let's just, and now they're saying, Uncle Google said this, yeah. Uncle ChatBT or ChatGPT or Uncle Social Media said this. And I think whether 1,000 years ago or a week ago, I think the most important thing to what I would call communicate with someone who has a drastically different knowledge base or experience or perspective is, number one, validate that you understand what they're saying. You have to align before you change. And if there's not a sense of appreciation or acknowledgement, and then use it as an opportunity to say, you know, I can see why you're thinking that way. I understand where you're coming from. I understand the information you have access to is different than what I have access to. But let me share with you how I'm thinking about this that is probably different than your way. And let's see if we can come to some kind of agreement about how to move forward. And I think when you approach things like that, you're respecting the other person, you're acknowledging their perspective, and you're asking them permission. I think, yeah, may I share with you why I'm thinking the way I'm thinking and what I'm basing it on? And when you know, it's kind of tough to say, hey, if you're the doctor and you're, you know, what do you mean asking permission? You know, it's like, you know, they're coming to me for help. Why should I ask them permission? But I think in these sort of situations, asking permission to sort of share a different perspective shows a mutual respect. And I think that's really important. That's where somebody will say, you know, that person really respected me, might still disagree with them, but I trust that person now. I at least I'm open to the conversation. I'm open to change. So I think that's the best way to approach it these days.
Makes good sense to me. Maybe you can give me an example of a high performing individual that struggled with well-being, because it seems like there may be lots of those. But what I hope for is a happy ending. Can you come up with somebody that maybe overcame these challenges? Oh, give wow. me some hope, Doc.
Wow. Okay. All right. So I obviously I can't share names or anything like that.
Sure.
But I had this athlete who was severely anxious. Okay, severely anxious. This was a golfer. And severely anxious with the coach. Okay. And the athlete just needed what I would call it was a cultural issue, you know, personal distance, just distance. Okay. And that athlete was a high school athlete, was very good and could have gotten, you know, was wanting to get a collegiate scholarship. Well, after understanding the depth of anxiety they had and helping them with anxiety, and then working with the coach to say, here's how you should approach this relationship, that young person was able to get a collegiate full ride in a year and was no longer anxious and was focused on and was thought differently about how to pursue feeling better, and feeling a sense of control, feeling that they could adapt to the stress, feeling more optimistic and positive about the future. And so doing that kind of stuff, I mean, that was an amateur athlete, but, you know, when you work with pros and, you know, 5 million is on the line, 10 million, 20 million, 30 million, and their whole, you know, career is at stake, when you help them look at the world differently and they bring that different mindset to their life and also their work, you know, instead of, you know, not having a career, they become Hall of Famers. And so it's so satisfying when you can do that. And I think here's the good news. I am so proud of all of the leagues now in the U.S. and also International Olympic Committee. They are so focused on mental health and well-being of world-class athletes, and they have programs, and athletes are more upfront about this. It's wonderful that they care about this, and they know, it's what I would call I think in the military, you would call this a force multiplier. So mental health and well-being is essentially a force multiplier. And I think in the medical world, for physicians to have well-being is really a quality and career multiplier.
So we hear so much in the medical world and then the physician community about burnout. Mm. What do you believe the root causes of physician burnout are, and how can we address these issues systemically?
Okay. Well, so obviously this has been going on for a while, but I think if we all agree that burnout is about work, okay? Well-being is about life, but burnout is about work, and there's three components in burnout. There's exhaustion. There's what I would call this depersonalization and cynicism. And then there's this just not feeling that you're accomplishing anything, okay? So here we have, and I started our conversation with, we have what I would call world-class mental athletes that are physicians, okay, who are passionate about their purpose in life, okay, and they're not feeling control over what happens. And despite being what I would call having tremendous drive, tremendous stamina, tremendous persistence, tremendous resilience, they're exhausted. So I think we, as leaders, have to take some responsibility for this. We're the ones that create the organizational milieu that sort of that has been somewhat responsible for this, if not mostly responsible, potentially. And that is, how do we create an environment? And whether it's, everybody talks about EMRs. Well, maybe it's that. Maybe it's the regulatory burdens. It's the meeting burden. It's the productivity burden. It's the, hey, be nice to somebody, be empathic, but make sure you're done in 6.5 minutes. Build that relationship, make them give you 5 on the Google Gold Stars, but make sure you see 35 people in the day. I'm just sharing that as an example. Nobody does that. But when you have a disconnect between how you thought a clinical interaction or career and what it actually is, that really is, that's when you have that demoralizing kind of exhaustion. And so I think it's a combination. Let's face it, physicians are driven. They're going to work nonstop. Should they not do that? Of course they should not do that as much. Should they rest and recover? Of course they should rest and recover. Should they learn? Because what your question, your aid, they're going to get more distrustful people that come to them because just the way society is. All right, let's help them build the skills to address that. Let's make sure they have time away from the office. And I'll give you one example. Every executive, okay, do you know any executive in the United States that after every meeting has to do their own meeting minutes? Not a single person. There's not a single job where you have to write down every single thing you just did and prove that what you did was valuable. And this is the only job in the world where you have to do that, or the only task in the world where you have to do that. Now, I think AI is hopefully going to fix it. I think I wouldn't say fix it, because I don't think technology fixes, you know, is people say technology caused this and can technology fix this. I do think technology will enable the reestablishment of the warmth and humanistic relationship. That's why physicians go into this. They are warm human beings that want to heal and help other human beings. And all this other stuff has gotten in the way. So our job is to be the, what I would say, the front line blocking and tackling. So the quarterbacks in our life don't get tackled. That's our job as leaders. And so, and the quarterback has to make sure that they also take care of themselves. And I think most organizations now have a dual approach. I remember 7, 8 years ago, there was so much talk about, hey, doctors should learn how to breathe and be mindful and to relax. And well, what's the job of the organization? What's the job of the leader? So I think we have reached a point, Michael, where physicians are understanding thou shalt take care of yourself. Organizations are understanding we need a strategy. And I think both organizations or physicians are sitting down together and saying, here's the data. Here's what the research says. What of these activities should we embark on in the next 2 years? Let's set goals together. Let's set action plans together. And let's measure if we're making a difference in your life. So I think you asked me the question, what can we do? I really do think it is a partnership. And it is an acknowledgement and a responsibility on both the clinician side saying, you know what, I'm going to try to make sure I take care of myself, but we've got to work together that my work life is not causing me all this pain. So sorry for that long answer, but I think this is...
It's a good answer. It's a good answer. It seems to me that there's also the issue of metrics, right? It's easy to measure how productive a physician is. We have RVUs. But how do you measure how well a physician prioritizes his or her own well-being?
Yeah, I mean, there are surveys out there, Michael. There are surveys about burnout. There's surveys about well-being and flourishing. And those may not capture the tiny details, but what I would say, like something like the flourishing survey or something like the burnout surveys, there's about a couple of them out there. Those are just barometers, and those should lead to conversations about specific things. And I think if you read, when you read the literature on this, you know, for internal well-being, let's face it, whether you're a doctor or a non-doctor, if you eat right, if you exercise, if you sleep, if you have great social relationships, okay, and you keep your mind active, guess what? That means you're going to have pretty good well-being. And you ask anybody, hey, do you think you're eating right? Do you think you're exercising enough? Are you getting enough rest? Are you spending the kind of time you need with your loved ones or people you want? And are you having a fun time? And sometimes it's, hey, are you taking care of your spirituality or not? And you ask those questions and you say, well, no, not really. I think I need to beef up these two other things. All right, fine. I'm going to focus on that. And then the workplace goes, well, what are the 6 things that really upset you about what we do? And you say, okay, here's the top 6 things. Let's work on these 2 things. And so I think the key is this: take care of yourself. Take care of yourself.
Do you believe that physicians have a duty to one another to help each other look after their well-being?
You know what? Thanks for asking that question. I think that is so important. And, you know, it's feeling vulnerable enough, okay? And this goes for leaders and physicians. First of all, physicians are all leaders, but, you know, physicians who are in executive roles, this sense of vulnerability and say, hey, I noticed things weren't going right for you. How you doing? Or being able to have the conversation, I tried this thing for me and it worked. I mean, we talk about group process or group collaboration. I mean, that's why I think like Apple, like I really, it is so great to be an Apple member because you get to talk to other docs and, hey, how did you deal with this? Or you can say, hey, I'm trying to get better at this. Or even when you're in your own organization, if you set what I would call a mutual accountability and well-being circle. And I think all, whether you're in a medical group or a hospital medical staff or whether it's an insurance organization, if you have a group of colleagues, you really should develop this sort of mutual accountability and well-being circle where you can be vulnerable and supportive at the same time with your colleagues. I think that is critical. I think, being a physician is an individual sport and we got to make it a team sport. And I've noticed that in team sports, there is this sense of mutual trust, support, accountability, and well-being focus, where being an individual is a lonely world. So if there's one thing I can say is, hey, if you don't have a well-being and accountability circle of colleagues, build one. Doesn't matter if you're a doc in practice, in a medical group, in a hospital, or you're a physician executive, you got to have it. And if you can't find it inside your organization, make it happen outside. I mean, psychiatrists, I'm a psychiatrist. I have at least three psychiatrists that I call up on a regular basis just to chat, bounce things off. And they call me. And it's sort of our sort of mutual well-being circle of just touching base and saying, oh, your world's like this too? So is mine. How did you deal with it? So.
Great. We could go on and on. This is absolutely fascinating. I wish we had more time, but our time together is coming to a close. But I wanted our audience to take advantage of your long career and expertise. As you look back on your journey, Dr. Dwan, what are some of the key lessons and insights that you've gained about high performance, well-being, and in leadership that you'd like to share with our audience and as we conclude?
Number one, set audacious goals. Set audacious goals and be committed to them relentlessly. And do a check-in. I remember, this is a silly story, but I remember I wanted to be a starter on the basketball team. Okay. And everybody else was like a foot taller than me. And I tried out 3 years in a row and I didn't make it. But I worked really hard. But I said, no, I need to shift gears because I'm never going to be 6'5" and never going to be 6 foot. So, but I was passionate about goals, passionate about working hard, but then adapted. And then what I did not do earlier on that I started to do later on in my career is I asked other people for advice. I put together a kitchen cabinet for my career, for my growth. And I looked to people that were superb at what they had done. And then the third thing I did was I looked at other people that were tremendously successful. And I said, I want to learn what they're doing that I can emulate. And so when you're younger, it's all about you. As you grow, you start sort of appreciating other people's viewpoint. You want to learn from others and you still make the decision for yourself. But it's so important to be thinking around you and with others. And I think that's really important. And I think that was a support system for me later on. I'm not, tennis players, it's a lonely sport. But it's okay to be with others. And that's I think that's the only way to be high performing, is you learn from others. I think it's the only way to have sort of, you know, well-being. And as a leader, if you don't have a group of other leaders that you bounce things on, leadership is already a lonely place. You don't want that. You really don't want that. You want to have that sense of, you know, that sense of well-being, that hopeful and positive mental state that's fueled by a sense of purpose. So when you're with others, your purpose really becomes stronger, because those people also have that same purpose, and you get real great validation when that happens. And I think that's how you maintain your well-being as a leader. Okay. And that's why I know an organization like a physician leader organization is so critical for well-being. I think it's just, when I go to those meetings, I feel so good. I feel so good because you get to share stories and you get to develop friendships and collaborations that are just so important for your own well-being and for your high performance. So that's my answer, Michael.
Very well said. If there are members in our audience today that would like to reach out to you, how can they get a hold of you, Dr. Duan?
Oh, they can email me. They can email me at nakesh.dewan@bcbsfl.com. That's my work email.
We will put that in the show notes. It's been an absolute pleasure to speak with you today. Thank you for being on Sound Practice.
Oh, thanks for inviting me. It was my pleasure. Thank you.
My thanks to Nakesh Duan for his time and insights. His work and writings on physician well-being benefit us all. Dr. Duan is a true physician leader. My thanks also to the American Association for Physician Leadership for making this podcast possible. Please join me next time on Sound Practice. We release a new episode every other Wednesday.
You've been listening to Sound Practice, the business podcast for physicians and healthcare leaders. Check out the show notes for this episode at soundpracticepodcast.com. If you have any suggestions for future episodes, we'd love to hear them. Email us at info@soundpracticepodcast.com. Subscribe to Sound Practice wherever you listen to podcasts so you can automatically receive our episodes. And please rate us and comment on the podcast in iTunes and Google Play. Sound Practice is presented and produced by the team at American Association for Physician Leadership. We are the world's premier organization for all aspects of physician leadership in every sector of healthcare. Learn more at physicianleaders.org. That is holy cow, Batman and Robin, Red Bull Kapow.